So as I said, our focus is upon, on this day, the events and the big event that is associated with that this day, and that is the return of Jesus Christ. And we know that Christ is coming, but as we look at our present world, it is a world that has a multitude of problems. And as we look at the world, basically the world comes down to two major views, which seem to be the way that human nature is programmed, or how human nature trends, and that is toward conservative or liberal or progressive or whatever you want to designate it. And we're divided into those two major views, and why we're one way or the other, I'm not sure. I tend to be one particular way. Nobody told me to be that way, but it just seems the natural way, and it seems however you see it, it seems natural to you. And there are words that are used to describe the issues and forces on either side of the divide. And in fact, as you look at the news media who reports to us, they've taken a side as well, and they tend to favor one side more than the other. And many times we can learn about ourselves as we do seek to understand the news and look at the news. What we will do is tend to pick out the news that jives with what we believe and how we see things, and we'll tend to tune out the other guys. That's how we tend to be as human beings. And of course, the different views that are manifested over time have been around for a long time. That's just the human nature and how human nature plays out. And today, as you look at the world, many people are concerned that the divisions that we see in our nation that are reflected in these different views are becoming worse, that people are becoming entrenched in their particular point of view, and there is no meeting of the minds. There is no reconciliation. And as people become entrenched in their particular position, we find bitterness setting in, anger, hostility, slander, and the cooperation and goodwill. What are those? Where is that practiced? Sadly, we don't see much of that. And we see that there is sometimes cooperation and there is goodwill, but not as much as I think most of us would like. Let's look at Isaiah chapter 3. Isaiah chapter 3. And Isaiah is looking at the world of his time. And as you look at what he has to say, it's really tells us a lot about the world we're in. Isaiah chapter 3, verses 4 and 5. Here it says, "I will give children to be their princes, and babes shall rule over them." So it's interesting on that particular verse, as you look at Greta Thunberg basically chewing us out for not doing what we should do. She's an angry little girl, and you're like, interesting. But anyway, that's the world we live in. But as a 16-year-old girl, does she see the whole picture as well as she should? Maybe some of the things she says are right. But again, it says, it's interesting that you have the children to be their princes and babes shall rule over them. And that isn't just a matter of age. It's talking about the lack of maturity that people who are ruling over you have. They're basically children. And I don't think I would have my children rule my household when they were 16, 15, 13. I wouldn't do that. They didn't have the wisdom at that point in time. And what he's talking about. You have immature people leading you. Immature people. In that sense, they're babes. It says, "The people will be oppressed, everyone by another and everyone by his neighbor. The child will be insolent toward the elder and the base toward the honorable." Do we live in a world where the elderly are not respected? The idea is, you're not contributing. We don't need you anymore. And so many people, as we have an aging population, we have that kind of thing. But the aged do contribute greatly to the society because of their experience, because of their knowledge. And to just dismiss them is foolish. And God tells us to honor our elders and have respect for them. But we live in a world where that's less and less the case. Today in our news reports, we find each side tearing down and ridiculing the other. That's on a daily basis. And I find it disturbing, so I can't listen to it for long. So you hear it and you're like, okay, that's enough of that, and turn it off and move on. And sadly, the divide is widening, it seems, and people are becoming fixed in their particular position. And people aren't coming together to be in unity and harmony. And we need to recognize what is happening in our society. And some do, many don't. People are willing to be polarized and live in that polarized position, but that is a sad state to live in. Issues on which we are divided, the border, judicial nominees, abortion, the Middle East, whose fault is a hurricane or natural disaster? Whose fault was Hurricane Harvey? I don't know, but I didn't enjoy it. But anyway, that's how people look at things, that something of that magnitude would be caused by a particular person, especially a political entity. In 1775, a year before the Declaration of Independence was written and issued, a man by the name of Samuel Adams wrote to another man by the name of James Warren. He said, "No people will tamely surrender their liberties." People normally aren't going to give up and give up their liberties. "Nor can any be easily subdued when knowledge is diffused and virtue is preserved." So if knowledge is widely distributed and people are well educated about what's important and they're seeking to live a virtuous life, it's hard for them to be taken in. It's hard for them to lose sight of what's important. He goes on to say, "On the contrary, when people are universally ignorant and debauched in their manners, they will sink under their own weight without the aid of foreign invaders." In other words, people that reach this state are easily overcome, and basically people in that mindset destroy themselves. They sound good and they work for the system that we see in existence today has been implemented, and the ideas seem to sound good, but you know, they never work out. People buy into them and say, okay, they're going to fix this or that, but it never works out because they're human ideas. Proverbs chapter 16 verse 12 says, "There is a way that seems right to a man." So we're going to implement this tax plan, or we're going to implement this fix. But why doesn't it ever work out? Why doesn't it ever work out? "Because there is a way that seems right to a man, but the end thereof is death." It's never going to fix it. Wish it would, but it isn't. So we're here today to observe God's Festival of Trumpets, the Feast of Trumpets, and it is truly a special day. Let's look at Leviticus chapter 23, verse 23. Leviticus chapter 23, verse 23. This is where God tells us to keep the feast, this particular feast. And it says, beginning in verse 23, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses." So the Lord is speaking to Moses. This isn't Moses' idea. It's God's idea. And he's telling Moses, "I want you to relay this idea to my people, Israel, and later on, the church." He says, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, on the first day of the month," which this is, "you shall have a Sabbath rest." So it's a time in which we rest, just like we do on a weekly Sabbath, but it is an annual Sabbath. "You shall have a Sabbath rest." And it says, "a memorial of blowing of trumpets." So it's trumpets are associated with this. I think it is a memorial of shouting is what it is literally. And you can shout in a sense with the trumpets. "A holy convocation." So as I said earlier, this is a holy convocation because God said, keep this day, and God is in it. It's just like the Sabbath is holy because God set it apart, and God is in it. It says, "You shall do no customary work on it. So we don't go to work. We meet here for services. And you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. So we took up an offering, but we did not make an offering by fire to the Lord. And the reason for that is there is no temple. So that can't be done. There will be a temple in God's kingdom, but at this point, it's all done in type. So the instruction on the Feast of Trumpets is the shortest of the Holy Day instructions, but it still tells us what we need to know. It is, as you look at the Feast of Trumpets, it is a focal point, because as you look at the seven holy annual holy days, you have the trumpets. Trumpets is right in the middle. So you have 3 days prior and 3 days after. It's right in the middle and, in a sense, is a focal point. It is the first of the four holy days of the seventh month. So as you think about the idea of a trumpet, what it's talking about there, the word that is used is called shofar. So many of us are familiar with that particular word, shofar. And it is the ram's horn, and it basically is a horn that was used to warn God's people. When you heard that, it was dangerous times, serious times. And where did the where was the shofar sounded first? When and where was it sounded first? It was first sounded at, it's the first mention in the Bible is at Mount Sinai. It was sounded out at Mount Sinai. In the Sansino commentary, which is a Jewish commentary, it says this. The heading is called the Day of Memorial or Rosh Hashanah. So Rosh Hashanah, when you see that on your calendar or wherever, it means Day of Memorial. And so it's a memorial of blowing of trumpets, and they represent something significant. A comment in that particular commentary says this: as the seventh day in the week was a holy day, so the seventh month was the holy month of the year. Seventh day, seventh month, the holy day of the year. Now, I mentioned that the first mention of shofar is in Exodus 19, so let's go back there to Exodus 19 and let's take a look at a few things that are said there, because they're important to our overall understanding of what all of this means. Exodus chapter 19, and begin in verse 16. Exodus 19, verse 16. It says, then it came to pass on the third day in the morning that there were thunderings and lightnings and a thick cloud on the mountain, and the sound of the trumpet was very loud, so that all the people who were in the camp trembled. So here are the people of Israel gathered at the base of Mount Sinai. And there's all this smoke and thundering and lightning, and they hear this great trumpet sound. And all of this is going on, and I'm sure that it was most imposing, and these people are terrified at what's going on here. And so this heavenly trumpet sounds, and the camp trembled. Verse 17, and Moses brought the people out of the camp to meet with God, and they stood at the foot of the mountain. So they're standing there, they're going to meet with God. Verse 18, now Mount Sinai was completely in smoke because the Lord descended upon it. Its smoke ascended like the smoke of a furnace, and the whole mountain quaked greatly. I'm sure if we were there, we would be most impressed and maybe a little fearful ourselves. And then it says, and when the blast of the trumpet, the shofar, sounded long and became louder and louder, Moses spoke and God answered him by voice. So humanly, it's hard for you to blow a trumpet and to keep up the sound and to blow it louder and louder, because we have to draw a breath. But if you're an angelic being, you're not bound in that particular way because you're not human. So the sound gets louder and louder and more imposing as it goes along. And so we see here that there's all this quaking and noise, and it's very imposing and created a great deal of fear in the people of Israel. In chapter 19, Exodus 19, verse 20, "Then the Lord came down upon Mount Sinai on the top of the mountain." So God came onto the top of the mountain, and the arrival of God on the mountain was preceded by what? Preceded by a loud shofar. "And the Lord called Moses to the top of the mountain, and Moses went up." So we see here the angel that was blowing the shofar didn't have to breathe, as I said, and they could keep blowing that trumpet louder and louder in a most imposing way. And so Moses went up the mountain, and the people of Israel said, "Okay, that was pretty impressive, but we're not going to go near God." They were afraid. But Moses wasn't. He went on up the mountain because he already had a relationship with God. God had already been working with him, so he feared God and respected God, but he did not cower like the people of Israel did. So the first sounding of the trumpet, the shofar, ties in with what took place with the giving of the law at Mount Sinai. But the shofar is also a memorial of another important event in the history of Israel. So what event would that be? Let's go to Joshua chapter 6. You might be thinking, well, the book of Revelation. Yes, and that does have trumpets most assuredly associated with it. But we're going to look at another place where trumpets are a very important part of what took place. Joshua chapter 6. Joshua chapter 6. So we find that Moses died before they crossed into the promised land. He led them all the way to the brink of entering into the land, and he died. But before he died, God designated that Joshua would be the head of the nation of Israel, that he would take over Moses' responsibility, and he would lead Israel. And he led them across the Jordan, and he led them into the promised land, and he would be their leader as they conquered the land, as God commanded them to do. So let's go to, and as they came in, the first place they came to at the crossing was the city of Jericho. And the city of Jericho was a most impressive city. It was considered the strongest city in the land of Canaan, and its walls were considered impregnable. So from a human point of view, why are we going to start with the biggest challenge we're going to have? Why not let's start with some podunk places and conquer them and build up our confidence before we take on the biggest of the challenges we're going to face? And God said, no, we're starting right here with this particular city. It's right on the path. We're going to take it on. Joshua 6, beginning in verse 1. Joshua chapter 6, verse 1. It says, "Now Jericho was securely shut up because of the children of Israel. None went out and none came in. And the people of Jericho had heard about Israel making their way north on the eastern side of the Jordan. They heard about them coming. And this vast number of people, they heard about crossing the Red Sea and the devastation that had been done to the nation of Egypt. They had heard about that, and they heard them coming up the eastern side of the Jordan, heard about them, and they saw before they ever entered the land the conquest of two of the greatest kings east of the Jordan. So this was already known. So these people knew that this was a formidable force that was coming their way. So they shut up the city. They closed up the gates, and nobody went in, and nobody came out. Joshua chapter 6, verse 2. "And the Lord said to Joshua, 'See, I have given Jericho into your hand, its king, and the mighty men of valor. You shall march around the city, all you men of war. You shall go all around the city once. This you shall do 6 days. And on the seventh, and seven priests shall bear seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark.'" So, how are they going to array themselves in regard to battle? You know, does he tell them to sharpen their spears and their swords and get their shields ready to go? He doesn't tell them that. He says, here's what we're going to do. We're going to march around the city. We're going to blow trumpets. And you guys are just going to march. So is that how war is conducted? Not in most circumstances. So it says that in verse 4, Joshua 6, verse 4, and seven priests shall bear seven trumpets of ram's horns before the ark. So you're going to have these priests blowing on the trumpets, and the ark is part of it. And as we look at this, as we look at that picture, we have seven priests with seven shofars, the trumpets of ram's horn, and they're walking in front of the ark. Going on in verse 7, it says, but the seventh day you shall march around the city seven times, and the priests shall blow the trumpets. So physically speaking, did it matter if you went around once or seven times? How is that going to physically impact the city of Jericho? It's not, other than they're going to stand up there watching you guys march around. But physically, it's not going to impact the city. So if you had confidence that we just have to march around the city and the walls are going to fall down, we can march around all we want, and nothing's going to happen. So you might try that for demolition. You have to demolish something, march around it seven times, and see if it falls. Well, probably it won't. So anyway, verse 5 says, it shall come to pass, when they make a long blast with the ram's horn, and when you hear the sound of the trumpet, that all the people shall shout with a great shout, then the wall of the city will fall flat, and the people shall go up, every man straight before him. It says, so they were told to circle the city once a day for 6 days. On the seventh day, they were to walk around the city seven times with the sounding of the ram's horns. And on the seventh day, after going around the city seven times, the priests were to make a long blast with the ram's horn, and the people were to offer up a great shout, and then the walls would fall down flat. And the people were to go forward straight before them, and those shofars were to represent what is going to take place here, and they were to get the people's attention. And I'm sure that the people of Jericho were wondering what was going on. And hearing those shofars, I'm sure that they had their attention. Joshua 6, verse 8. So it was when Joshua had spoken to the people that the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord advanced and blew the trumpets. And the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, or Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, followed them. And what does the ark represent? The ark represented God. So God was involved in this. God was part of the procession. And the ark was accompanying them, and the reason for the building of the ark was to represent God dwelling among them. So you had the shofar out in front, and right behind them you had the ark. Before continuing on, let's go to Joshua chapter 5. Just across the next page, Joshua chapter 5, and let's look at verse 13. Joshua chapter 5, verse 13. And it came to pass, when Joshua was by Jericho, that he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, a man stood opposite him with his sword drawn in his hand. So Joshua notices that there's this, what appears to be a man, and this man is standing opposite of him, and he has his sword drawn. So Joshua went to him and said to him, are you for us or for our adversaries? So who are you for? On whose side are you? Verse 14. So he said, no, but as commander of the army of the Lord. He's the commander of the army of the Lord. So who would this be? This would be the one we know as Jesus Christ. He said, and now that as commander of the army of the Lord, I have come. Now come. And Joshua fell on his face to the earth and worshipped and said to him, what does my Lord say to his servant? So Joshua quickly recognized that this was God. And he bowed before him. Then the commander of the Lord's army said to Joshua, take your sandal off your foot, for the place where you stand is holy. And Joshua did so. It was holy ground because God was present. And Jericho was shut up securely because the children of Israel had arrived. And it was God's intention that they would conquer Jericho. And there with them was the commander of the army of the Lord with his sword drawn. Chapter 6, verse 8 once again. So it was when Joshua had spoken to the people that the seven priests bearing the seven trumpets of ram's horns before the Lord advanced and blew the trumpets and the ark of the covenant of the Lord followed them. So there they are in procession. God is with them. Verse 10. Now Joshua had commanded the people saying, you shall not shout or make any noise with your voice, nor shall a word proceed out of your mouth until the day I say to you, shout, then you shall shout. So they began the seventh day. They had gone through this 6 days, and on the seventh day they got everything together and they began their journey, going to go around the city seven different times. And they had to be quiet. They were going to be out there quite a while on this seventh day. No talking, no talking, no shouting. You had to be quiet. So they went around the city. They completed their seven times going around the city. It says in chapter 6, verse 15 of Joshua, but it came to pass on the seventh day that they rose early in the dawning of the day and marched around the city seven times in the same manner. On that day only they marched around the city seven times. And watching this take place seven times as they're, okay, they've got one lap in, two laps in, and they haven't said a word. Nothing's going on except them hearing the trumpets. Nothing else is going on. And they're all wondering, what does all this mean? And the seventh time it happened when the priest blew the trumpets that Joshua said to the people, shout, for the Lord has given you the city. And they went up straight in their path and the city fell. And as they went up into the city, usually when you took a city, one of the parts of the conquest was you plundered the city. So you were able to take the gold and the silver and all the jewels, everything that was of value. But God said, don't do that. Don't take any of that. Don't take any of it. It says in verse 18 of chapter 6, it says, and you by all means abstain from the accursed things, lest you become accursed when you take of the accursed things, and make the camp of Israel a curse and trouble it. But all the silver and gold and vessels of bronze and iron are consecrated to God, to the Lord. They shall come into the treasury of the Lord. So you're not to take any of this. This is all to come into the treasury of the Lord. And ultimately it was going to be used as God made the tabernacle and all of the implements and all of the gold that was needed for that. Joshua chapter 6 verse 20. So the people shouted when the priests blew the trumpets. And it happened when the people heard the sound of the trumpet and the people shouted with a great shout that the wall fell down flat. And they took the city with the edge of the sword. So we see this in regard to Jericho. We've seen that the trumpet is associated with the coming of God and the giving of the Ten Commandments. We've seen that this is part of the conquest of the city of Jericho. And it's interesting, as you go forward in the Bible, that there are only two places where seven trumpets appear. There are only two places, two chapters in the Bible where the seven trumpets appear. That's in Joshua chapter 6 and in Revelation chapter 8. In both Joshua 6 and Revelation 8, the walls fall flat. In Jericho literally, and at the end of the age, figuratively speaking. So the incident mentioned in Joshua is mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11 verse 30 as an example of faith. So as an example of faith, because what they were asked to do was to believe God. Okay, if we do this, we trust God and we follow His instructions, this city will fall. And it did. They did what God told them to do. The city fell. They conquered it. Let's now go forward to Revelation chapter 11. As you look at Joshua's arrival at Jericho, it foreshadowed the coming of Jesus Christ. Christ's arrival on earth to confront the rejuvenated or resurrected kingdom of Babylon. So that kingdom is going to be resurrected again, and it will be the kingdom that exists, the system that exists at the return of Jesus Christ. So let's look at Revelation chapter 11, verse 15. Now, as I look at this, we're focusing on the seventh trump, not the other trumps, but trumpets is associated with not just one trumpet, but seven trumpets. But we're going to stay focused on the seventh because of its significance and its tie-in with the book of Joshua. Revelation chapter 11, verse 15. So Revelation 11 speaks of the church. It speaks of measuring the church. It speaks of the two witnesses. And right before chapter 11, verse 15, we see the two witnesses are killed, and then they're raised from the dead. But Revelation chapter 11, verse 15 says, "Then the seventh angel sounded." Remember, seven trumps at Jericho. "The seventh angel sounded, and there were loud voices in heaven saying, 'The kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever.'" So the sounding of the seventh trump signals God giving Jesus Christ the go-ahead to return to earth and to assume the throne. Revelation chapter 11, verse 16, it says, "And the 24 elders who sat before God on their thrones fell on their faces and worshiped God, saying, 'We give you thanks, O Lord God Almighty, the one who is and who was and who is to come, because you have taken your great power and reigned.'" And it's, you know, I was surprised when I came into the church, and although this was in my Bible, I never read it. I was surprised that people were going to be angry with the coming of Jesus Christ. Okay, wait a minute. This is going to be the best thing that's ever happened to people on the earth, and you're angry about it? It's because people don't want to give up their power. They don't want to give up the things that they have. So they're going to fight with Christ. You know, it talks about in Psalm 2 that the nations rage in vain against the coming of the Messiah. "So the nations were angry, and your wrath has come, and the time of the dead, that they should be judged, and that you should be reward your servants, the prophets and the saints." So keep that business about judging in mind, because we will come back to it. So Christ is going to return. His reward is going to be with him. And those who fear your name, small and great, and should destroy those who destroy the earth. "Then the temple of God was opened in heaven, and the ark of his covenant was seen in his temple." Interesting, as you look at this in the return of Christ, you see the ark of the covenant that's in heaven, the type of from which the ark that was on earth was made. And you see it here in this situation, and you see at the end of the verses there, "And there were lightnings, noises, thunderings, and an earthquake and great hail." Doesn't it sound like Mount Sinai? Let's go to Revelation chapter 19. Revelation chapter 19. And as you look at the chapters in between Revelation 11 and verse 19, they fill us in on certain background matters. It's not chronological, those chapters, but they fill us in on certain things that are crucial to the story. And the seventh trump blows in Revelation 11, and Christ returns. Let's go to Revelation chapter 19, verse 11. "Now I saw heaven opened, and behold, a white horse, and he who sat on him was called Faithful and True. And in righteousness he judges and makes war. His eyes were like a flame of fire, and on his head were many crowns." So this is Jesus Christ returning to the earth, and it describes him coming to the earth and his coming back in might and power. He will be King of kings and Lord of lords, and he will tread the winepress of the fierceness and wrath of Almighty God. So he's going to come back, and he's going to come back with power and defeat all of the enemies. And he will be Lord of lords and King of kings. And all human kings and lords will be under this king. Let's go to Revelation 19, verse 17. Then I saw an angel standing in the sun, and he cried with a loud voice, saying to all the birds that fly in the midst of heaven, come and gather together for the supper of the great God, that you may eat the flesh of kings, the flesh of captains, and flesh of mighty men, the flesh of horses and of those who sit on them, and the flesh of all people, free and slave, both small and great. Verse 19 of chapter 19. And I saw the beast, the kings of the earth, and their armies gathered together to make war against him who sat on the horse and against his army. And so they're going to fight against the returning Christ. Then the beast was captured, and with him the false prophet who worked signs in his presence, by which he deceived those who received the mark of the beast and those who worshipped his image. And these two were cast alive into the lake of fire. So they are going to be defeated. They're going to be cast into the lake of fire. And it says, the rest were killed with the sword, which proceeded from the mouth of him who sat on the horse, and all the birds were filled with their flesh. So it's a terrible picture, but it is something that is to take place as Jesus Christ returns, and basically the walls of the system that exist at that time are going to collapse. And all of the armies and all of the enemies of God are going to be defeated. Let's go to Matthew chapter 24. And let's look at a few things here. We looked at Matthew chapter 24, verse 3 on the Sabbath. And the disciples were asking him, well, when are you coming and when are these signs going to take place? They're on the Mount of Olives. And as they're on the Mount of Olives and Christ is explaining to them, well, they could look from the Mount of Olives down into the temple. They could see down into the temple and see the courts and see the magnificent temple there that had been rebuilt by Herod. And so they're on that mountain and they're talking about things to come. Matthew chapter 24, verse 29. It says, immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened. So we know that as God's plan plays out, one of the things that's going to happen is going to be a time of tribulation. At that time, the sun will be darkened, and the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. So this great event is going to take place, and it's going to be something that people have not experienced in the sense of what goes on with the sun and the moon. It's going to be something quite unusual, and people will recognize it's unusual. They may not recognize its significance fully, but they're going to see something's going on here. Chapter 24, verse 30. It says, then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn. And they will blow, they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. So Christ is going to come back. Exactly what the heavenly sign is there, the sign of the Son of Man, we don't know exactly. I'm sure when we see it, we'll say, never seen that before. And we'll recognize something quite unusual is going on. But the people are going to be unhappy about the return of Christ. As I said, they don't understand the significance of what's taking place. Verse 31, it says in Matthew 24, verse 31, it says, and he will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, a great shofar, maybe a similar sound to what caused the people of Israel to tremble when they heard it at Mount Sinai. And they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. So Christ is going to come in his glory. A trumpet is going to sound. So again, we see Christ, the coming of God, is coming about, and a trumpet accompanies that. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 15. We are familiar with these scriptures which talk about the coming of the Lord. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 15. It says, For this we say to you by the word of the Lord, that we who are alive and remain until the coming of the Lord will by no means precede those who are asleep. So Paul is explaining this is what happens to those people who live up until the time that Christ returns. They're not in the grave, they're alive, physically alive. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a shout. Remember, with Joshua, there was also a shout. And we see, go on here, with the voice of an archangel. Is that the shout? With the trumpet of God, and the dead in Christ will rise first. Then we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and thus we shall be with the Lord. Therefore, comfort one another with these words. So Christ is going to return. It's going to be obvious what's taking place because of the shout and because of the trumpet. People are going to hear these things and know that something significant is taking place. Just like the people in Jericho, they heard the trumpets. They heard it, and it signified something to them. So we see the Feast of Trumpets will be the time for God to step in to take control of the earth. Because the earth is not going to continue to exist with any life on it if God doesn't step in. So God is going to intervene. That's the overall point of the Feast of Trumpets. God will intervene. And as God returns to this earth, it's said that he's going to exercise judgment. He's going to exercise judgment. And the question then becomes, what will be his standard of judgment? How is Christ going to judge? And so that's an important question. Because for the church to be ready when this momentous event comes, we need to know what the standard is and make sure we measure up to the standard. Let's go, as you think about that standard, well, you say, well, I know what the standard is. The standard is God's law. And that's true. That is true. That is the standard. But if you just think of the law that was given at Sinai, that's not the full picture. There's more to it than that. As you look at what God said through his servant Malachi, he said, "Remember the law of Moses, my servant, which I commanded him at Horeb for all Israel with the statutes and judgments." God said to remember it, and we should. Even though a lot of people living in our time say, forget about it. You don't have to keep that law anymore. And here it says, remember it. So if we say, well, it's just the law of Moses we have to remember, that would be incomplete. And to help us to understand what law we're talking about, that law is included, so I'm not saying it's not, but there's more to the picture. To understand this, let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 18, because it gives us some insight into the standard of judgment. Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 15. So in chapter 18, God is speaking with Moses, and we see in verse 15 where it says, "The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your midst, from your brethren, him you shall hear." So Moses is speaking, and it's talking about there's coming a prophet like Moses, not Moses, but one like him. And what's a prophet like me? What are details about that prophet? Deuteronomy chapter 34, verse 9. Deuteronomy chapter 34, verse 9. Deuteronomy 34, verse 9. It says, "Now Joshua, the son of Nun, was full of the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him." So this is getting close to the time that Moses will die and Joshua will take over. "So the children of Israel heeded him and did as the Lord had commanded Moses. But since then there was not arisen in Israel a prophet like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face." Moses was a unique individual. Unique. In many different ways, and there was no prophet like Moses, whom God knew face to face. Chapter 34, verse 11. In all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent him to do in the land of Egypt before Pharaoh, before all his servants and in all his land, and by all that mighty power and all the great terror which Moses performed in the sight of Israel. So God worked great miracles through Moses. And the people recognized that Moses was God's instrument. You know, most emphatically, the Pharaoh knew, because Moses would come to them, say what's going to happen, and it would happen. And so what took place was irrefutable. And then God says, I'm going to send another prophet. I'm going to send a prophet like you in the future. And let's go to verse 17. Deuteronomy 18, verse 17. Sorry about that. Deuteronomy chapter 18, verse 17. So we've talked about verse 15, where God is going to send a prophet like Moses. And verse 17 says, And the Lord said to me, What they have spoken is good. That is, the people of Israel said, Look, we don't want to hear God's voice again, so you talk to us. You be the intermediary between us and God. And so they didn't want to hear God's voice anymore. It was too imposing. And verse 18 says, I will raise up for them a prophet like you from among their brethren, and will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak to them all that I command him. So God was going to deliver additional teachings to what had already been delivered to Moses. So Moses had delivered God's message, but there was more that was going to be added. So God prophesied this through Moses, that there will be additional teachings that we need to be aware of. And those additional teachings have to be added into what we already know as far as how God is going to judge us. Chapter 18 of Deuteronomy, verse 19. It says, And it shall be that whoever will not hear my words, which he speaks in my name, I will require it of him. So it's serious. Will you listen to the prophet like Moses? Now, as we come to the New Testament, and Christ has come and he has died, and we move on in time to the time of Acts chapter 3, Acts chapter 3, we find Peter speaking in his second sermon. So he gave a sermon in Acts chapter 2 on the day of Pentecost, and later on he gives a second sermon. And part of that sermon that we're going to look at begins in chapter 3, Acts 3, verse 18. There it says, But those things which God foretold by the mouth of all his prophets, that the Christ would suffer, he has fulfilled. Repent, therefore, and be converted, that your sins may be blotted out, so the times of refreshing may come from the presence of the Lord, and that he may send Jesus Christ, who was preached to you before, whom heaven must receive until the times of restoration of all things which God has spoken by the mouth of all his holy prophets since the world began. So with the coming of Christ, the restoration of all things is going to begin. Trumpet signals that restoration coming. Acts chapter 3, verse 22. Acts chapter 3, verse 22. There it says, For Moses truly said to the fathers, The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet. So he's quoting Moses and pointing out that Jesus Christ is the fulfillment of that promise that was made back in the book of Deuteronomy. And Peter understood this and he preached it. And you go forward in time to Stephen. Stephen understood this and he preached it to the people who were trying him. And they didn't want to hear it. They were offended by it. And that contributed to his being stoned. So they understood that Christ was the fulfillment of what had been promised back in the book of Deuteronomy. And that they needed to listen to what God's Son, the one that God sent, they needed to listen to him. Let's go to John chapter 12. John chapter 12. John chapter 12, and let's begin in verse 37. John chapter 12, verse 37. But although he had done so many signs before them, they did not believe in him. So remember, Moses did signs and wonders? The one who came as a prophet like Moses did signs and wonders as well. But they didn't. Those signs and wonders did not impact the people. They didn't pay any attention to them. Verse 38, that the word of Isaiah the prophet might be fulfilled, which he spoke, "Lord, who has believed our report? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed?" And they didn't see it. It was going on right there before them. And they didn't see it and respond to it. Like it says, that God has blinded their eyes and hardened their hearts, lest they should see with their eyes. Let's go down to John chapter 12, verse 41. There it says, "These things Isaiah said when he saw his glory and spoke of him. Nevertheless, even the rulers, many believed in him because of the Pharisees. They did not confess him." So they saw what took place and they believed that he was the Messiah. But they wouldn't say that this is the Messiah. They would never say that because they would be kicked out of the synagogue. And that's where their standing was. They weren't going to compromise with that. So in verse 44, "Then Jesus cried out and said, 'He who believes in me believes not in me, but in him who sent me.'" So God the Father is the one who sent Christ. And if you believed Jesus' words, you're not believing just in what Jesus has to say. You're believing in the one who sent him. He says in verse 46, "I have come as a light into the world, and whoever believes in me should not abide in darkness. And if anyone hears my words and does not believe, I do not judge him. For I did not come to judge the world, but to save the world." So as you look at that, you're thinking, well, wait a minute, what does that mean? Does that mean there is no standard of judgment? Well, you have to read a little further on. Then you see the answer. John chapter 12, verse 48. It says, "He who rejects me and does not receive my words has that which judges him." So there's something going to judge you, but it's not going to be me. He says, "The word that I have spoken will judge him in the last day." Excuse me. "For I have not spoken on my own authority, but the Father who sent me gave me a command that I should say what I should say and what I should speak." So God said, "This is what I want you to share with humanity. These are the things that I want you to teach and preach. And the word that Jesus spoke will judge each individual in the last day." And he uses the words last day. It's a singular. Many times you'll see last days. Let's go on to John chapter 6, where it talks about the last day. John chapter 6, verse 38. John chapter 6, verse 38. It says, "For I have come down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me." So Christ came to do God's will and to seek to do God's will in everything that he did. Verse 39. It says, "This is the will of the Father who sent me, that of all he has given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up at the last day," at the time of the resurrection. "And this is the will of him who sent me, that everyone who sees the Son and believes in him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day." So that last day is a pretty important thing. I will raise him up at the last day. That's not what we're all striving for. That's why this day is so significant. Part of what it represents is the last day. And the question is, as God judges us, will we be raised on the last day? Now, to clarify how we will be judged according to what is taught in the Bible, let's go to Revelation chapter 20 and begin in verse 11. Now, you can say, well, this is talking about the second resurrection, which it is. But what is applied here applies to you and me. It applies to all people because God is not a respecter of persons. God judges everybody the same. And he gives us a pretty clear view of how he judges. Revelation chapter 20, verse 11. Then I saw a great white throne and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away. And there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and books were opened. So these books were opened. So what books are those? What books are those that are going to use to make judgment? Well, we know them as the Bible that is going to be used as a standard of judgment. It goes on to say in verse 12, and another book was opened, which is the book of life. And that book is opened to us in this time, but for most people, that book is going to be opened. The book of life is going to be opened to those who will rise up in the second resurrection. So it says, goes on to say, and the dead were judged according to their works. Don't let anybody tell you that you're not judged according to your works. You don't earn salvation, but you're going to be judged based upon whether you walk in faith. I believe in God, but I don't believe I have to keep his law. If you think about that, there's a disconnect. So if you believe in God and you believe in his law, then you're going to keep his law. You can't separate one from the other. So the dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the books, that is, the Old and the New Testaments. So the Bible gives us instruction as to how we're to live. And we're going to be judged on whether we are living by the Word of God. So this is how God is going to judge. He's going to judge us according to our works, and he's going to see, are these people in harmony with my words? The words that Moses gave and the words that were given by Jesus Christ. And you know, many people say, well, Jesus is Lord. Jesus is my Lord. But do they keep the words found in the Bible? And look at what Christ said. In Luke chapter 6, verse 46, we don't have to turn there, but it's a familiar passage. Luke 6, verse 46 says, but why do you call me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? And so we have to, if Jesus is our Lord, then we need to do what he said. And as you look at the Old Testament, that certain instructions were given, and as Christ came, he gave additional instructions. And more than anything, one of the main things that Christ imparted is the idea of the spirit of the law. He said, look, I know it says don't murder. So that's true, and you shouldn't. But you can't hate him either. You know? Can't do it. You can't hate him. You know, you don't have sex outside of marriage? That's right. That's true. But you can't even be looking on the opposite sex with lust in your heart. So it's a matter of mind and heart and action. For instance, God expects us to be poor in spirit. He expects us to mourn the sins of the world, to be meek. He wants us to be peacemakers. He wants us to do easy things like loving our enemies, treating others as we would want to be treated, to forgive other people so that we can be forgiven as well. We're to be people who give, and as we give, it will be given to us. So Christ explained to us what we should do as well. So he added to what was already in the given to us by the prophet Moses. And you know what? If he had nothing to add, why send him in the first place? He taught, and those teachings were recorded for us. And you know, as it talks about in Luke chapter 6, in one place it talks about it, it speaks about it in Matthew, but In Luke chapter 6, let's look at verse 47. Luke chapter 6, verse 47. It says, "Whoever comes to me and hears my sayings and does them, I will show you whom he is like. He is like a man building a house who dug deep and laid the foundation on the rock, and when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently against that house and could not shake it, for it was founded on the rock." So, as we heed the words of Moses and we heed the words of Jesus Christ, it's like building our house on a rock, an immovable foundation. Verse 49, "But he who heard Jesus' words and did nothing is like a man who built his house on the sand." So how long is that going to stand? You know, if you built your house on the sand, it's not going to stand up to the bad weather. You know, people that just built their houses on the sand and the storm came, it washed them away. You know, the walls fell down just like Jericho. So we have to realize that we need to prepare for the coming of Christ and the judgment that will come along with it. And we realize that as we are faithful and as we do what God told us to do, that there is a reward that will come. Like it talks about in Revelation chapter 11, it says that his reward is with him. And the reward for whom? The reward for God's people who have been faithful. In Matthew chapter 28, Christ told the 11 remaining disciples to meet him at a certain spot. And he came to that, as after his resurrection, he came to that spot, and he tells them, he speaks with them, and in Matthew 28, verse 18, it says, "All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. I am God's representative. All authority has been given to me by the Father." And Christ returned to God's right hand, where he is at present, and he's not come as king yet, but he is coming. And then in Matthew 28, verse 19, the disciples were told to go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations. You're to make disciples of all nations. And it says in Matthew 28, verse 20, "Teaching them to observe, to do all things that I have commanded you. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." So the disciples were told to go out and make disciples and teach them the truths that you have learned. And from one generation to the next, they're to be passed along. How did we come to know about these things? Why are we here? I did not grow up from a religious background where we knew anything about the Feast of Trumpets. I didn't know about Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, none of that. I knew about Easter. I knew about Christmas, Christian holidays. What a shock when you found out, I don't think those are Christian. And, you know, my vantage point was, this is all Jewish. We don't have to do this. And then you see, wait a minute, these aren't Jewish days, as it says in Leviticus 23. These are God's holy days. Oh, that's quite a reckoning. So we're here on the Feast of Trumpets to observe the Feast of Trumpets. And we're reminded this day of its importance. You know, this day reminds us of the trumpets that sounded at Mount Sinai as God spoke to Israel his Ten Commandments. The shofar is a memorial of the Battle of Jericho and the fall of one of the great cities of the world. And that city fell as seven priests blowing seven shofars proclaimed God's sovereignty over that city. And we are told in the book of Revelation that seven trumpets will sound, and those seven trumpets will announce God working out his plan, his intervention in the world, and his bringing all mankind to salvation. So the sounding of the shofars is a reminder that God will one day intervene, and thank God he will, that he will intervene and stop the mess that exists today and bring about refreshing and restoration. So Christ's return will be preceded by seven angels. Those seven angels will sound their trumpets, signaling the coming of Christ. And then Christ will appear in the heavens above and ascend to this earth, landing on the Mount of Olives, and the good things will begin then. The good things will begin as God works out his plan. So this week, take a few minutes to think about what will happen as Christ returns. As he sets up his kingdom, will it really be that good? Will it be better than this world? I think so. So think about what stands out in your mind and bring it and share it next week. And we can be hopefully restored and refreshed, and hopefully it'll pique our interest in the upcoming Feast of Tabernacles. Well, thanks for your attention.